From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week on Intersection, we're talking with MU student artists. These young people create with paint and fabric and even barbed wire. And for them, making art is really serious work, as well as a passion. We learned about our guests through the university's first undergraduate visual art and design showcase, which took place on campus in January, where all our guests won awards for their work. We'll start with Caitlin Allen, who showed costumes for Lady Capulet and Lady Montague.
They are both from Romeo and Juliet, which was just put on in October by the University of Missouri Theater Department. So our costume designer in-house, she's a professor, Professor Carrie Packard, she designed all the costumes for it. I think there were like 35 costumes she designed. Yeah. And so my job in all this was to draft patterns, make mock-ups, fit them on the actresses, and then actually create these garments. And so it was a big task for me. I'd never done a project on that scale before, so really being able to see it all come together was a great experience. And then being able to kind of put it into words and present it to people who might not know that much about costume design was a really awesome thing to do, too.
And what makes costume design different from things people might know more about, like fashion design?
Exactly.
And I mean, I'm sure what we know is from Project Runway, but
yes.
What makes it different from that?
So I'm an interdisciplinary studies major. So my components are theater, textile, apparel management, and history. So I do some work in the textile department too. And their costume design, costume construction is quite different from fashion design and fashion construction. For instance, costumes have to be rigged so that an actress can get in and out quickly if there's a fast change. They also have to, you know, on historical garments for Romeo and Juliet, it's obviously set in the Renaissance. And so there are corsets and different undergarments that have to be worn that you wouldn't typically see in a fashion aspect of it. And also, again, patterns are different. So for this piece, I looked a lot at paintings from the Renaissance, you know, how garments were constructed then. I also looked at Renaissance-style patterns and how we could construct them to make them look like our costume designers envision. So for our costume designer, too, it's a lot of working with the director and, you know, the actresses and with the costume, who's actually the costumer who's creating them, to make sure that we're getting everyone's visions correct. So unlike fashion, sometimes it's a lot of collaboration with making sure things look okay on stage.
And there are a lot of people involved in the creation. So
Yeah. The
professor who has the concept, you who go through putting together how it's going to be designed, and then the actual person who physically creates the costume as well.
Yes. So I work in the costume shop, too, in the Reinsberger Theater. And so, you know, we do a couple plays a year. And normally in a costume shop, we have our designer. She designs them all. And then we have a costume shop manager, supervisor, Mary Frances Hodson, who helps us kind of determine how these pieces are going to go together. So we'll look at the patterns and kind of, you know, figure out how they're going to work for the stage. Because a lot of times, you know, a pattern that we make, we put it on an actor, get it on stage, and it doesn't look right, or it's too big, or it's not working. So we have to work with a lot of people. There's, I think, 5 of us who work in the costume shop every day, part-time kind of workers. And it's a great experience for us, and it's really interesting to get in there and kind of figure out how it all goes together.
So you do a lot of physical hands-on sewing,
so
too?
Yes, so every day doing different things, seam ripping or sewing on buttons or, you know, taking in hems on things or just every day is different in there, and it's awesome. So we did a musical, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and so that's a very distinct look. And then we went to, you know, Romeo and Juliet, which is a very historical look. So it's every day is different in there, which is awesome. I love it.
And when you were looking at the clothing for Romeo and Juliet, what were you thinking as you looked at these pieces of clothing? Do they seem comfortable, uncomfortable, terrible, heavy, light?
When I first was given this project, it was a really kind of daunting task because if you look at Renaissance paintings, a lot of them are, they don't draw in seams or, you know, you don't know what's underneath them all the time. So we have to determine, you know, are there going to be corsets? Are there going to be petticoats? You know, so what all goes into that? And then my job was I had to determine where do seams go, which is something you don't always think of when you're looking at paintings and photographs and stuff. Like, where are these? How does this actual piece work? But yeah, and then I know our actresses go through, they love when they can actually put on the costumes and get into character.
That was Caitlin Allen, an MU student who showed costumes for Lady Capulet and Lady Montague from Romeo and Juliet at the university's first undergraduate visual art and design showcase in January. This week on Intersection, we're talking with student artists about their work. Brianna Heese is a Columbia native and a ceramicist. Through her work, she explores society's fluctuating relationship with nature. Brianna started out as a science major, but decided to make the switch her sophomore year.
Because my drawing to professor was like, you're good, you know, really encouraging. And I decided when I came to that point where I'd have to give it up that I didn't want to do that. So I made the decision to be an artist, and my family was like, oh, that's awesome.
So they thought that was a good idea?
They were supportive, uh-huh. Very supportive, yes.
And what did it feel like for you to make the decision to be an artist? It's so hard to choose a creative profession, I guess, or to orient yourself towards that so early, because you feel like you're making a huge decision to be something that is almost hard to define yourself as, I think.
Yes. Well, it was surprisingly easy as a sophomore to say that I was going to do that. And then the last couple of years, you know, the reality kind of sinks in. And it's difficult, I would say. But knowing that there's options out there, and it's definitely a self-driven kind of thing to pursue. If it took me a year and a half or so to realize, like, this is not something you just go to class for. So definitely in the last year, I found myself just kind of in the studio all the time, which was when I knew that ceramics was really what I wanted to do, because I would be there 6 hours before class and then stay 3 more hours for class. And yeah, it's just that kind of drive that you need when you realize what you want to do.
Being from Columbia and Missouri, do the landscapes here or any of the interactions between the landscape and technology or people influence your work?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think if I had to pick, like, a thing around here that inspires my work or has inspired, it's perhaps going from those moments where you leave the city Columbia is not a big city, but, I mean, any city. And maybe, like, Kansas City, you pass through the kind of run-down downtown area where all the big buildings have all those windows broken out. And I see structures that, like, 50 years ago were usable and functional and, like, had a purpose, and now they're just sitting there. And then going from a scene like that to the countryside where you see, like, again, just kind of the remnants of old barns or perhaps an old factory or an old mill or something. And they're kind of left there. And then the nature starts to kind of grow up around it. And it is that kind of decay-ish kind of factor about it. But it's kind of that fluctuation in relationship that I find intriguing. Not that they're left, you know, it doesn't make me angry. I just find it interesting.
I think there is some sort of fascination with abandoned structures. I mean, whenever you're on Facebook, or least for a long period of time, it was like abandoned airports, abandoned shopping malls, abandoned gyms. I mean, there is something about this place that was made and beautiful and filled with life and now is nothing. I think it tells people about our mortality or how ephemeral we are. I mean, it definitely touches people in some way.
Yeah, I agree. It holds a certain aura, atmosphere around it. At least to me, it kind of speaks to the past. You know, you wonder, like, about all the people or the things that used to happen in a place like that.
And where do you see yourself going from here? You've just graduated.
Yeah. I am applying to a couple different, like, I'm going to apply to some residencies. I have one, like, fellowship, more of a grant-type fellowship that I'm working towards. And, I mean, if that happened, which is a very long shot, that would be amazing. And I would kind of use those funds to push my experiences as far as, like, inspiration and cultural experiences into, like, Europe and Asia, and check out the industrialization of European landscape, which is kind of another factor that I look into. And then, like, Eastern cultures, like Japan has a huge pottery culture that I just, coming into ceramics so late, I don't know much about these histories. So I see my work kind of diving more into ceramic history and human history.
That was MU student and ceramicist Brianna Heese. This week on Intersection, we're talking with students about their creative callings. Simon Tatum is from the Cayman Islands and explores his island's culture and history through his art.
The art that I displayed in Jesse Hall is part of a larger body of works that I've been working on, and they all have to do with reflecting back on Caymanian history and culture. I'm, I guess, a young Caymanian, a person from the Cayman Islands, which are islands within the Caribbean. They're British colonies. And so when I came here to Mizzou and I started studying arts, it became curious about exploring my own history, which I was quite naive to. And so that's what the body of work is about, is going back and exploring these histories and coming to conclusions from them, and then I guess reflecting them back through my artwork so that they kind of pose questions and help people become more familiar with this lost history of my islands.
And what have you found as you explore that culture through your work?
It's interesting. I mean, Cayman history is like nothing else in the world. Cayman is, I believe, the only colony that is a British colony by choice. And Cayman is one of the only Caribbean islands that didn't have an original Ambonese tribe that remained there when the Spanish and the English and the Dutch started making settlements in the Cayman Islands. And that has to do with Cayman's kind of harsh ecosystem. It wasn't very easy for people to settle there permanently. It was quite difficult, actually. And so that's kind of what Cayman consists of, is just a constant flow of people going in and out of the islands. And so it starts with the Dutch and the Englishmen who were stationed in areas like Jamaica, and then they used Cayman as a port to collect turtles, which is something that we're commonly known for being the islands that went around and did turtle fishing. And so it starts there. And then it has to do with development after that. Certain people, especially poor people who were coming from England and other areas of the UK, decided to settle in Cayman just as an alternative option from, I guess, the poor society they started in the UK. And then when the slave trade started happening, that's when, I guess, African descendants started showing up in Cayman. And they were traded for different things like that, supplies like turtle meat, persatch rope, slaves were traded for that. And that's where the African influence comes in. And then when certain settlers began making boats, started sailing around the Caribbean and doing imports and transactions like that, that's when we started bringing in South American, other Caribbean islands, and North American as well. And that's what Cayman is basically just a large influx of people going in and out, and that's what Cayman identity and Cayman culture has been built on.
What did you find when you were exploring Cayman history that surprised you, and what did you find that you expected?
That's great. Well, I guess I expected to kind of look into the idea of colonization and understand the different hardships that early colonists experienced, and I definitely found that. There's no doubt about that, and that's something that's still very commonly sought after. Or referenced by older Caymanian generations up until, you know, the modern generation, which is myself. But then changes, I guess, in Cayman history and understanding how Cayman history and Cayman culture have been built. I mean, I guess I went in with this original identity, or not original identity, this original idea that I wanted to find out what it meant to be a modern Caymanian and to kind of fix myself on Caymanian identity. And I realized, especially that, I realize that when you're looking for something that's specifically Caymanian, that doesn't really exist as you'd think, because even Cayman history and a lot of the sources that they have, whether it be photos in the Cayman archives or text, a lot of that have been written by foreigners who come to Cayman and take an interest in it themselves. And so I guess that was a big surprise for me, was realizing that a lot of the history that I know and a lot of things that are passed on to me and exist today for me to explore actually don't come from what people would term as original Caymanians. And then I guess that led me to kind of question again this idea of what does it mean to be Caymanian, especially in modern times when you go abroad and you take that identity with you. You know, what does that mean to carry that with you?
And what have you found that it means to carry it with you? Coming to a place like Missouri, I mean, it's culturally and geographically very far.
Right. I guess there's certain traditions that I grew up in. For example, Cayman's a very small community. The islands, all three islands, I think their total population is about 65,000 people.
Mm.
So that's about Columbia, Missouri's population, isn't it? I think Columbia, Missouri's population is actually larger than that.
It is, yeah.
And so when you grow up in such a small community like that, you grow up in such a small, close-knit community, you know everybody. And as far as the way you communicate with people and as far as the way as people treat you and how you interact with people, it's much more friendly or much more open and less self-centered, I believe. And then, again, like I said, Cayman consists, or modern Caymanians consist of influx of people coming in and out and mixing together. And so if you really are a Caymanian today, you're not white, you're not black, you're not single or anything, you're all mixed up. And so that was another thing I guess I grew up with, was this understanding that I grew up with this population that were this mulatto population that everybody's kind of mixed together. Then when you come to the U.S. or maybe the U.K. as well, you kind of get this idea that people start to put you in certain categories and maybe label you as you're either white or you're black or something like that. So that's also been a big transition. And also the geography is itself, like you said, Cayman's a Caribbean island. You know, it's warm all the time. Coming to Columbia, Missouri, that's completely different experience, seasons. And not that that's bad. The seasons are beautiful. But then when you grow up on such a small island, you kind of have this idea of boundaries and limitations, and you grow up with the idea of, or this respect for the ocean and natural forces, which have such an effect on your island. I think that's a big part of it as well.
That was Simon Tatum, an art student at MU from the Cayman Islands, who is exploring the heritage of his island home through art. Madeline Olmsted is a senior art major from Palmyra, Missouri. She's currently doing a residency at the Resident Arts in Columbia and will have her own exhibit at the end of May.
My work started out as a self-reflection of my own emotions and negative and positive events that have taken place in my life. So it started out, I was really exploring my own feelings and emotions and kind of transforming that into an artwork. And it was kind of a form of meditation. It was a little bit of therapeutic for me. And so it was really helpful just to kind of be present and focus on artwork and how I was feeling and just really transform it into something that was like in my hands that I could actually hold. And so I started with, you know, my own feelings, and then I started researching. I'm really interested in mental illness and human psychology and the human mind. I actually started out as a psychology major, so I'd done a lot of research. I was really interested in mental illness. I'm affected by mental illness myself, and so I'd already done a little bit of research on it, but I really started looking into the causes of mental illness and where it stems from, and I got a little bit angry. A lot of the causes of mental illness are from like childhood trauma or an unstable childhood environment. And so a lot of these things can be prevented, but there's not a lot of education or resources for people to know, you know, mental illness is this huge prevalent thing in society, but there's not a lot of help for those with mental illness, and there's not a lot of resources, and there's not even a whole bunch of awareness. It's something society tries to turn a blind eye to. And so I think that mental illness is just extremely important, especially in on a college campus. And so I just really wanted to bring awareness to it and bring it out in the open.
And how did you start creating, and could you describe some of the works or maybe your favorite work that was on display in Jesse?
My favorite work, well, I have two favorites. My first favorite is a book called Healing, and it's a book, it's made out of silk organza, tea dyed to kind of mimic the texture of human skin. And then it's done with embroidery, and I did 7 pages to document a week of the healing process of self-harm, specifically cutting. And so I researched, I looked up a bunch of pictures of people that self-harm and cut, and I looked at the healing process, and so I made a book that illustrates day by day what those cuts would look like from the very beginning to the very end of the healing process. And so that's a very graphic, surprising book. You can't tell from the front cover what you're going to be looking into, so you're really surprised by the morbidity of it. The second piece that I'm really, really drawn to is a piece called Nightmare. It's actually a 3-part series. There's a teddy bear, a pillow, and a blanket. And so I wanted to take these items of comfort from your childhood and juxtapose it with the threat of trauma and all of the horrible negative things that can happen to you as you're a child. And so I made the pillow out of barbed wire so you can't lay on it, it would hurt. The teddy bear is made out of wire too, and he's stuffed with paper and he's crying. He's very sad, and he's chained to the pillow. And then the blanket is hanging on the wall, and it features a birdcage. It's embroidered. And so it kind of focuses on those traumas that can happen as you're a child that are kind of ignored and they're pushed away. Oh, they're not a big deal. It's a child. They'll recover. But those do have a lasting impact, and you can be trapped by those traumas for your whole life. And so that's what I wanted to do, is kind of show the threat of trauma along with these childhood objects.
It's really interesting to me to talk with college students today, because I feel like there's this idea that you need to be really, really pragmatic about your undergraduate studies, and those need to lead to a career, and that needs to be really solidified. And so it seems like it would be very hard to choose something like art. How did you reconcile that?
It was very hard. I tried human psychology. I tried human lifespan and development. I've always been very interested in the human mind, and I wasn't exactly sure where that was going to take me, if I would be a therapist. But I started researching into that, and I realized that it would take a ton of schooling to make the amount of money that I was thinking in my head would be the right amount of money to live off of. And so I started honestly making myself sick. Do I even like this career? Am I going to want to do this for the rest of my life? And so that's where my mental illnesses kind of came into play. I started triggering my mental illnesses. I got myself very sick. I was in a very bad place, and I started creating art just to help myself. And I just decided, I'm good at this, I can do something with it, and there's a meaning behind it, so why not go for it?
That was Madeline Olmsted from Palmyra, Missouri. And this week on Intersection, we're talking with student artists at MU. Finally, let's hear from Kara Rinella. Her work is inspired by classic comics like Peanuts and Calvin and Hobbes. In her work, Kara's taken on the very modern first world problems meme, which you can see all over sites like Facebook and Twitter. Kara interpreted first world problems through dinosaurs.
So this calendar was something I worked on last semester, and I'm often drawn to goofy and quirky things. And so I was searching for some topic to be the subject of this calendar. And first world problems is like a popular internet meme, and basically just pokes fun at today's population for complaining about the silliest and most like minuscule like problems. And so I knew I wanted that to be my subject, but it still needed something else. It was missing something. And then one day dinosaurs popped into my head. And I was like, this would be perfect to mix these two opposite things together, having the prehistoric clash with the modern, mm-hmm. and have these dinosaurs be the protagonist to experience things that we would relate to. So it's a 12-month calendar, and each month has a different problem, and all 12 cards sit on top of a rock, so it's a nice little desk calendar.
And that's funny, because I think part of the idea of first world problems is that we've created such a comfortable world that you complain about things that are meaningless, you
right,
know?
Like, yeah, I had a lot of good feedback from people, and also had a couple calendar orders, too. So it was exciting to be able to share that with other people as well.
So tell me about how you came to drawing and to these sort of commentaries on society.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always just loved to illustrate and draw. I mean, that's really what got me into graphic design to begin with. I drew a lot of inspiration for the illustrative style for this project from classic like comic book artists like Charles M. Schulz of Charlie Brown, Bill Watterson, Calvin and Hobbes. And I mean, I probably pored over so many funny pages like when I was younger. So that really rubbed off on my illustrative style. And this dinosaur calendar project was a fun way for me to just really do my own style and express it through first world problems. So,
do you feel like illustration is living sort of a new generation with the art students and college students today? Because I think sometimes when we think of illustrations and comics, we think of maybe the 50s or the 60s, mm-hmm. and comic books, which are awesome and people collect all the time. Is it still that way, or is it different?
I think there's been more of a growing trend to think. I see more illustration and graphic design more, which is great, because I want to find a job where I can really showcase that kind of stuff. But yeah, I really think it's growing, and whether it's, you know, more free-handed illustration or more vector graphics, like different kind of spectrum of all different illustration is really coming back.
Thanks to MU student and artist Cara Ranella for telling us about her work, First World Problems, as portrayed by dinosaurs. This week on Intersection, we've been talking with MU student artists about their work. Keep an eye out for the university's second undergraduate visual art and design showcase next year. Now let's hear about something a little different. Jamila Batchelder works with the Career Awareness Related Experience, or CARE program, here in Columbia. Part of the CARE program is hiring 15 young artists to work and create each summer.
The CARE program is a teen employment program, so most of the CARE program is placing teens in job sites around the city, and the city pays their salary, and then the job site mentors them and trains them so they get work experience. I work with the gallery, where we hire teen artists to make art all summer. We bring in professional artists from the community who lead them in a project, and then they conclude the summer with a community art show at a professional gallery. They get the experience of putting on a show and selling their work.
Are there other cities that you know of that do this?
I don't know any that actually pay the artists to do them. There's a lot of programs that provide free arts programs, but what we find is that for teens who fall into the at-risk category, who are low income, just having a free program doesn't actually overcome the barrier of expenses, because if you need to work that summer, if you need to make some money, then, you know, sure, an arts camp sounds fun, but you have to choose, you know, the job at McDonald's instead.
And when somebody applies, do they submit sort of examples of their work, or how does that process go?
Yeah, we look at the samples of their work. We're looking for a lot of things. We're not so much looking for just, you know, amazing, already professional level art. What we're looking for is people with a passion, with creativity, with people who want to grow, who are willing to work hard, because this is a job. It's not just a class. This is something where we also really work with them on developing professional skills. So we look at their artwork, and we also talk to them about what their goals are and where they're hoping to go if they were to get this position.
What was the thing that surprised you most about the teens that you worked with last summer?
How deeply they go in their art, how raw and personal, and what they can bring out. One of my very favorite experiences was we were working with the artist Stacy Pottinger, a photographer, and she sent the teens out to photograph textures in downtown Columbia. And I went with a team that was these two teen boys, and to see them get so excited over an amazing patina on some bricks. I mean, it was as if they'd seen a pretty girl or something. They were like, look at that, look at, you know, to have them see the world in a new way, to really look and see beauty in places they hadn't before, that just blew me away.
That was Jamila Batchelder of the Career Awareness Related Experience, or CARE program, here in Columbia. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, conversations in our community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold, Carlo Canta, and Amanda Beiler. And of course, thank you to our guests for sharing their work, which you can see at our website at kbia.org, or visit Intersection on Facebook and Twitter. Please tune in next Monday at 6:30. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, right here on KBIA 91.3 FM.